what we got here is a problem of human beings being treated like refuse, and I think it's endemic to the market economy itself. And I think the only solution is probably not, I mean, although we have to work through the legislative channels, I think probably the solution is some sort of moral awakening, like you people are talking about, where you do something to raise consciousness in the people at large that what's going on here is that people are being reduced to down to nothing, and that it's systematic, it's endemic in a system that treats human beings as nothing but labor, you know, and that this kind of fictionalization of what a human being is the basic fictions that drive our market-based economy, is the turning humans into the fiction of labor and turning our environment into the fiction of land and turning all of our energy and all of our yearnings and strivings as a people into the fiction of capital, you know, and then manipulating those things in a mathematical way that, you know, a formula that produces more money and calling that good. And this is equivalent to the worship of mammon in its worst form. And, I'm, you know, you people are the casualties of the street. And let me tell you what, I'm not far off myself, but I live in a rural area, so it's a little different, you know. But basically, I see a lot of people struggling around here, and it's trailers and trailers, you know. I'm working on some ways to try to address that myself, but I was just hoping that I could address some of those people out there who are kind of hard-headed and think that, you know, homeless people are there because they deserve it. But the fact of the matter is that there's a force, there's an unseen, the unseen hand of the market is pushing a certain segment into oblivion, and it has to keep labor costs down, and it has to keep rents up.
We're in danger as long as we continue to paint homeless people in this country as somehow other. That there's not a history around how somebody gets to a certain point where they develop mental illness and they look or act a certain way on the streets. There was a whole history that took place behind a person getting to that point. The majority of us in this country that have been homeless, that have slept someplace other than having our own home or our own room, are people that have the same kind of work ethics, that love our children just as much, and there's nothing wrong with us. It's kind of like your caller said. There's this hidden hand that's out there. There's a race to the bottom in terms of wages in this country, especially with the Free Trade Agreement of the Americas and with a huge effort in this country to make poor and homeless people less than human beings. And similar to the civil rights movement, there has to be another movement in this country that begins to say, I am a human being. I deserve these fundamental rights. And not just says those things, but begins to actively try and reclaim them. Similar to, you know, King and his efforts around nonviolent civil disobedience, and Gandhi around his efforts around nonviolent civil disobedience, until we begin to create help polarize this issue and force people to make decisions, force all the different sections of society to begin to look at what's happening, how inhumane this is, and really put forward a moral outcry, we're going to continue to watch people die in this country. And so we need to start taking homeless people and sitting them down in the front row of a church and saying, what is this church going to do? What is this responsibility to bring homeless people into city councils, into their capitals, you name it, and begin to demand that people see us for who we are, human beings, and that they understand that homelessness is really a revolving door, and that if one person can be homeless in this country, then any of our children and any of us can be, and we have to turn that thing around. And unless we begin to, you know, continue to push the envelope and begin to get organized on every single block across this country, we're going to see some pretty scary things, I think, in these next couple of years, especially if we maintain our current administration.
I want to say yes, I'm not complaining. I'm not complaining at all. I'm very, like I said, 2100 should be a prototype of how a shelter should be operated.
You're not complaining about 2100, but
no,
you are saying
I'm
that
complaining
the society...
about, I'm complaining that we are trying to do something,
right?
But when we go out, okay, that's where the obstacles come.
Right.
And so, for example, homeless individuals will help themselves. It's not coincidental that the only politician that called or showed any interest in our concerns was a homeless individual himself,
right,
the governor of Ohio, you see? And I think it would be a great launching pad.
Congressman.
I think it would be a great launching pad. He's running for the president of the United States to come down to one of the largest shelters in the nation and use it as a prototype and say, as a congressman, this is what I was able to do with the resources that are available to me. And so if I can do this for the largest homeless population in America as a congressman, imagine what I'll be able to do as a president of this country. I think it'd be a great opportunity for him to show that not only as a congressman, political person, he cares, but Americans themselves cares. For example, if you notice throughout this marathon, this was not used as a fundraiser like the Jerry Lewis Marathon. So we're not asking for money. You see, all we're asking for is to be able to use the resources that we were told are available for us or out there. But when we go out there to use those resources, okay, all of a sudden there's a whole list of, well, this didn't happen, this didn't happen, this didn't happen, you see. And that's all we're asking. We're not complaining.
And I constantly hear all the time, how can homeless people be involved in that when they're so busy in their day-to-day life in crisis?
Well, they don't vote, do they?
And I think, and you know, that's the other issue that we're working on, is we have a campaign called the You Don't Need a Home to Vote campaign. And we're working on registering people throughout this country to vote, because homeless people actually do vote.
Well,
what happens is homeless people are manipulated at polls, told that they can't vote, that they need an address. And
yes,
in most states, that's not true. So I think part of the problem is we have not, over the last, I think what Sherry's doing is wonderful, and I've done housing takeovers myself. I think that one of the things that happened is we got afraid somehow. Poor people and people that work on poverty issues got afraid to do direct action and do sit-ins and really make this an issue that people have to pay attention to. We have gotten kind of cozy and really, there's a direct link between the prison industrial system and the homelessness industrial system. Because one of the reasons why there's no resources is a lot of people are getting rich on the issue of homelessness.
Oh, no,
there's a lot of people that are sprouting up across this country. There's all kinds of dollars for research and for service providers, but homeless people aren't benefiting from those dollars in the way that they should be. So I think part of it is our problem. We can't accept the fact that it's not an issue, that people aren't addressing it. We have to make it an issue. And that's how the McKinney Act got passed. When we got the McKinney Act passed, it was because people marched and people did hunger strikes, and people made this an issue, and that's what we have to continue to do, or we'll be in this shape forever.
I was able to walk around and sense the homeless situation in Washington, D.C., and I think it would be pretty startling for the majority of the public to know that within about two blocks from the White House itself, there are homeless people sleeping in parks. And the White House doesn't tell us about this. The Senate doesn't tell us about this. The House of Representatives does not tell us about this. And yet it is there every day. The other thing I wanted to mention is that while I was homeless, and I've been homeless off and on for some time, I voted frequently for all forms of elections. And as far as how I went about doing that, sometimes I was able to use an address of a friend or a P.O. box. I did stay in SROs, and I used their addresses when I could. I just wanted to mention that there are people out there who have gone through all of the trials and tribulations of homelessness and still took the time to try and take care of their bills, keep themselves clean, vote, participate in society, and try and hold jobs down.
should mothers be in this position that they're becoming homeless? I mean, should this
be
happening?
There should be no reason why a mother should be on the streets with her children. It's absolutely no reason. It's ridiculous. And my heart aches when I have phone calls that I can't help of people that are on the street with their kids. It's not enough space. We need more shelters, and we need housing that people can afford. Now, these houses that are being built are nice. They're good, but none of these people out here can afford them. I can't afford them, even with the job. So people that have no job, they're basically still on the street next to a real big, nice house. And it's not right.
And you're getting calls maybe every day.
I get so many calls. If I can't help them and there's no shelter space, I sit and I pray with them on the phone because that's all I can do for them. There's not enough. All the shelters are full. There's not enough space. People are cold. They're in bus shelters. They're in emergency rooms all night. They're at Wendy's all night. It's ridiculous. And abandoned cars and people, babies is outside dying.
I, God bless you. And I believe in prayer, so I'm not knocking it. But I can't help it. I'm sorry. You go to an office in Switzerland. They keep your house for you. You call up for help in the United States, and the best they can do is pray with you. Something is wrong.
It is. But when you're at a last resort, that's all you have left. That's all you can give when you can't give anything material. I can't give them a place. I can't even give them a blanket. All I can give them is the strength that I have to give to them. It may or may not help them, but it's there. Because you can either stay home and get beat on and be warm in your own home, or you can go out and be cold in the street with your kids.
And do you hear from women in that situation? They feel they have no choice between being beat up?
Every day.
That's common.
Every day.
And we're in Cleveland where there's a shortage of women's shelter space.
There are. So I can't even tell this woman, okay, well, when he goes to work, you leave. She don't got nowhere to go. I can't even tell her to go over someone's house. She has nowhere to go. So then she has to put this face on again for another day that everything's all good in her home. She's going to make her man happy and please him and try to keep him at a level so he don't go off on her or the kids or the house or anything until we can find maybe a secret place for her to go, a safe room. It's rough.
But you are here to say that one consequence of the shortage of affordable housing and the shortage of shelter beds, one consequence is that a lot of women are getting beat up because they got nowhere to go.
Well, they're not getting beat up because they don't have nowhere to go. They're staying in a situation they can't make better.
And I hope I got the right name here. I have Mr. Time Sizing from Boston. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, well, welcome to the Homelessness Marathon. Should I call you Sizing or Time?
Just call me timesizing.com.
Okay, fair enough.
We've got a website here that answers all your questions.
Okay, what's on your mind, timesizing.com?
Well, your guest keeps talking about the basic problem being employment. And you've got a company right there in Cleveland that is modeling the ultimate solution here. It's Lincoln Electric, and it cuts hours instead of cutting jobs. What we've been doing to ourselves, we've been downsizing instead of time sizing.
Oh, this is where the name time sizing comes from.
That's right. And we got a comprehensive website that includes 5 years of data on homelessness and prisons. If you go to timesizing.com, you go two-thirds of the way down the page.
Let's not get into it. People can look at your website, but what is the data on homelessness in prisons?
We have been monitoring the nation's top two newspapers for 5 years. In other words, the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal. And
okay.
We pluck out all the news about homelessness and prisons and the relationship with unemployment. And there is a definite relationship.
What have you concluded?
If unemployment goes up, crime goes up, prisons go up, and homelessness goes up.
All right, let me ask Joyce that. Joyce, that's on?
I think they're all connected in some respect or another. I mean, educational level, mental illness, drug abuse, all that is related and tied into a lot of all of that.
All right, so what's your solution, Mr. Timesizing.com?
Well, we believe that there's no ideal permanent level for the work week. What we need to do is we need to define unemployment in a very comprehensive way that includes welfare and homelessness and disability and prisons. And then we need to reduce the work week and squeeze out the vanishing market-demanded work onto everybody who needs it. reduce that work week as long as this comprehensive unemployment rate is too high or rising.
And do you think that's a preferable solution to, let's say, having jobs created by the government?
Absolutely, because we keep introducing all this wonderful technology that's work-saving. It's supposed to make life easier for everybody. But as long as we freeze the work week at the 1940 level of 40 hours a week, we can never, ever get the benefit of all that wonderful time-saving technology, work-saving technology, because we have to create as much bogus work as it will take to keep everybody spinning their wheels at a 40-hour work week.
Well, all right, it's a thought. I want to thank you very much for sharing that thought. I don't offer everybody this chance, Joyce, but let me say, for the moment, we're going to pretend that you are ruling the world. And if you are ruling the world, at least from the parole point of view, what would you do different?
Community needs to change their, be more aware of what's going on in their communities as far as who's coming back to their communities. Family need to be more involved with the offender who is incarcerated. I think if some of the offenders take advantage of the social services safety net that are out there, Veterans Administration is doing a great job at making sure that that people get signed up for the benefits that they're entitled to, social security and that those types of benefits that somebody needs to be enrolled in. There's a lot of things that we could probably do to reduce the number of homelessness. People just need to be educated on about offenders and about criminal activity, what's available and what resources are out there to assist somebody who is potentially on the verge of being homeless.
Mm-hmm. We're almost out of time, but let me ask you this. Is there a certain sense of desperation about the offenders now? I mean, is desperation a word that applies to them in terms of trying to get out of the mess that they're in on the streets and stuff and really make it in society again?
I think that's with anybody, with the state of the employment situation going on there. Everyone's afraid of perhaps what may happen tomorrow or the next week, just economically.